Die letzten zwei Jahre waren für viele E-Commerce-Brands relativ challenging, wenn es um das Thema Inventory geht, wenn es um das Thema Fulfillment geht. Produktionskosten sind gestiegen, es gab Engpässe in der Lieferung. Genau darum geht es heute in dieser Episode. Ich habe einen wundervollen Gast dabei, und zwar den Bahadir von der Company Fabrikateur. Wir werden über alle Insights sprechen, wir werden vor allen Dingen auch diese Lösungsthemen weitergeben, denn er hat extrem viel Erfahrung in diesem Bereich, in der Zusammenarbeit mit 7- und 8-Figure E-Com-Brands. Ultra spannende Episode, bleib unbedingt bis zum Ende mit dabei, viel Spaß. Willkommen zum Ecom Secrets Podcast, wo ich darüber spreche, wie du für deinen Online-Shop mehr Kunden gewinnst, deinen Gewinn steigerst und dir eine erfolgreiche Marke aufbaust. Ich teile hier Insights aus meiner Agentur Ecom House, wo wir in den letzten Monaten über 40 Millionen Euro in Werbung investiert und über 120 Millionen Euro Umsatz generiert haben. Viel Spaß! Und bevor wir jetzt reinstarten, wenn du jetzt hier neu bist, dann lass unbedingt ein Abo da. Egal, ob du jetzt einen Podcast anhörst oder hier auf YouTube dieses Video anhörst, damit du nichts mehr verpasst. Und jetzt viel Spaß mit dieser Episode. Alright, Bahadir, I'm so happy that you are here on the podcast. And for a long time, we didn't do any English episode. So I'm super pumped to have another new English episode with you here on the Ecom Secrets podcast. So, before we directly start into all these topics for today, first I want to ask you, how do you feel today?
Thank you very much, Daniel. It's also great for me to be here because it's going to be the first podcast of this year for myself. So super excited to be here. Feeling great and looking forward to talk about all the topics that we will discover today.
Amazing, amazing. So today we have actually for the podcast, a totally new topic, which I personally never speak a lot about. We will talk about a lot about inventory decisions, about supply chain, especially in these days where things are uncertain, yeah, and big changes and challenges for e-com brands. And I couldn't have someone better in this podcast for this topic because you're the master of inventory decisions and planning with your own company, Fabrikateur. So maybe that the listeners get to know you a little bit better, you could walk us through how was your hero's journey until now, and what do you do exactly?
So I'm from Istanbul, Turkey, moved to Germany 5 years ago, and I'm a digital product manager. I worked at several different companies in different domains. Some of them are in banking, fintech, and lastly, D2C. In Germany, I was working at a company called Marley Spoon, which is actually a D2C company in the food vertical, operating globally. I think now of more than 10 countries they're at, and it's an IPO'd company in Australia. So I've seen the very high scale of D2C operations with a heavy, heavy pressure on supply chain, because we were dealing with food, with expiry dates, food safety and everything. And I was responsible of the digital applications there, including the web app and also the mobile application in several different languages. And there was a great dependency on supply chain, obviously, about like what to show in the digital products, what to offer to customers, when things are going to be available. And the customer experience and supply chain were always going in hand to hand and depending on each other. On one hand, the supply chain team needs to know how much demand will be coming from the applications, and the applications need to know what is available in the warehouses, in the fulfillment centers. So it was a complex problem to solve, and they were doing a great job handling this at Marley Spoon. Around that time, I already had Fabrikateur as a business in Turkey. We started as a manufacturing management tool for manufacturers. We were helping them with the raw material supply, forecasting inventory and deciding like how much raw material they should order in order to process the orders from their customers. And the brands we were working with, actually manufacturers we were working with, were mostly white label producing for big textile brands like Inditex, Zara Group. And they were getting the order requests from their customers and producing, making the manufacturing in Turkey, and they were trying to balance their raw material supply. So that's how we started. We've seen the manufacturing side of the supply chain. We understood how the dynamics were working there. And towards the end of 2019, we decided to take on a different opportunity, which had a bigger problem to solve. And it's actually very relevant where we are coming from. But this time we decided to solve this problem for the brands, because if we solve the supply planning problem for the brands, then we could also solve the problem for manufacturers. If the brands are sending more regular purchase orders to their suppliers, the pressure on the supplier side will be less. So we made a pivot. We turned Fabricator into a tool where it promises to be the virtual head of operations for growing D2C brands. And since then, we're building this tool exclusively for Shopify brands at the moment and expanding into different platforms as well. So my main responsibility as the CEO of the company and also as the co-founder to make sure we are delivering the product that we are promising to our customers and growing at a steady pace in parallel to our customers' growth.
So how did you came up with this name? That was always a question I had.
When we came up with the name, it was actually my co-founder, Demirhan, who came up with the idea. He said, we are working with manufacturers, and every manufacturer's dream, in Turkish at least, is to become a fabricator, because fabricator means the person who owns a factory, who runs a factory. And it's always this like rich guy in the old movies in 80s, 70s, who's like the guy wearing this like buttoned jacket and running a huge factory. He's always rich. So it's kind of like a funny name. And at that time, we didn't have any plans to launch it in Europe. And when we launched the brand in Germany, especially, I was like, everyone asking the same question, like, how did you come up with the name? And then I started to dig deeper into the roots of this name. And I found that it actually has roots in Latin. And in many Latin-based languages in Europe, Fabricator is actually a great name because it rings a bell about manufacturing. Mm-hmm. It works in German, Italian, Spanish, French. Everyone understands. So we kept the name as it is. Also with the Ö and the umlaut, it worked pretty well. Like whenever someone says like, you talk about Fabricator, which Fabricator? And they said like Fabricator mit Ö. So it became even a brand.
Nice. And the company is based in Berlin, right? It's not in Turkey, or it's like split.
Yes. Yeah, company is based in Berlin. That's where I live with also my co-founder lives in. Mm-hmm. And the team is spread around globally. We have teammates in Turkey, but also in other parts of the world. So it's a remote first company. And we have been remote before it was cool. So since 2018, the company has been running remotely because I was in Germany. My co-founder was in Turkey. That's how naturally things developed. And yeah, now we are happily experiencing the benefits of being remote.
That's amazing. I'm also a huge advocate of a remote first company. I'm not against offices. I'm even thinking about to have a second office like this year for like optional, but being remote first has so many advantages. For example, finding good talent, right? You have literally the whole world to find good talent for your team. So I'm a big fan.
Nice.
Cool. So thanks for your, letting us understand your journey so far. I would suggest that we jump into the topic of supply chain today. I would like to start with like, what were actually the challenges for the past one and a half, maybe even 2 years for D2C brands regarding supply chain? Because a lot of e-com brands, they always think about scaling, growth, more customers, more revenue, more profits. But fun fact, everything else is scaling with that, even the supply chain, the customer support, and so on, which results in some challenges. So, from your perspective, and you work with a lot of D2C brands, what have changed? What problems do they have? And let's start with this topic.
So, in the past 2 years, actually, a lot of things changed in the supply chain. Previously. when dropshipping was quite popular, mm-hmm. and at its peak times, the supply chain was able to provide fast delivery, maybe fast manufacturing, just-in-time inventory replenishment was available. But in the past 2 years, things have changed, especially with COVID. We started to see how fragile the supply chains are, and it became more and more unreliable. And if you think about what happened in 2021, that big Evergreen cargo ship got stuck in the Suez Canal for 6 days, it blocked the supply chain globally. Not only the finished goods, but also raw materials were stuck overseas, and manufacturers were not able to produce the goods that they were planned for. So things went down very bad. And at that time, many, many brands actually started to understand that they cannot rely on supply chain with 100% accuracy. There's always things that can go wrong. And even if you forecast with a high accuracy, you must be open for the surprises. So that's change the mindset for D2C brands. Previously, maybe they were stocking the minimum amount of products in their warehouse just to have more capital in the bank account for investing into growth or other expenses. So they were living like from minimum to minimum inventory. But then when they realized the logistics started to be a problem, they started to place bigger purchase orders. So instead of ordering once in every month, it turned into once in every 3 months or once in every 6 months, they started to order, and it introduced new problems. Because when you place a bigger purchase order, means that you have a bulk of inventory in your warehouse and you need to figure out how to sell it. So it puts pressure more on the marketing and the sales side, because if you end up with that inventory, this will tie up cash and it will be the most like illiquid and also the most inefficient part of your business, also in your P&L. So that changed the dynamics a bit. And I believe it also brought marketing and inventory or supply chain teams closer, because each of their actions started to affect the other one. But then we realized there's actually not a perfect solution or a medium for these teams to collaborate on. And Excel sheets were all around the place. And believe me, a marketing person cannot read the Excel sheet of a supply chain person, because it has a lot of lingo in it and a lot of formulas that you don't understand. So there needs to be a translator in between. And this was mostly missing in the companies that we are working with. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, like, you also work with D2C founders quite a lot. D2C founders are great people when it comes to creative stuff. They're great brand creators, storytellers. They're great at designing products, finding ways to reach their audience. Amazing. But the supply chain, it's always the unsexy part of the business that no one really wants to touch. And as a founder, as a D2C founder, you have to find your way until you scale it to a level where you can actually hire a full-time supply chain expert or head of operations, basically. After talking to more than 300 D2C owners and operators, I've seen this path. They start with their self-learned information about like how to run supply chain, how to place purchase orders. They create their own basic Excel sheets that is good enough to scale up to $1 million or euros of revenue for the first year. But then when you hit that growth, when it starts the snowball effect, your Excel sheets will always fall behind the reality of growth that you're experiencing. And then it turns into a fear, right? My business is doing well. We're growing in sales, but what's going to happen with the inventory? Do we have enough inventory? Or because of we are so afraid of running out of stock, did we actually overstock? You never know. Mm-hmm. And that can always go unseen when you are at the growth stage. Maybe at the end of the 1 year, you can look at the missing, when you look at the missed potential sales revenue, you may realize that you could actually triple your revenue if you didn't have the stockout issues. And that's too late to realize. So you're trying to make this more visible, more real time, and also proactive rather than retroactive.
Mm-hmm. Let me bring even another challenge I have faced I think 1.5 years ago regarding marketing and stock, like supply chain. We always think like I'm a marketer, right? My goal is always to sell as much product as profitable as possible. But also on the other side, I mean, the marketing obviously affected the supply chain and the product because you need to also scale up when you scale up the revenue. But also the other way around, I have experienced with a brand 1.5 years ago where I helped on a consultant based that we were scaling up the revenue, the sales in Germany. And at the same time, obviously, they need to ship out a lot more of orders, but there was a problem in the supply chain. And the result was the founder was like fully focusing on the revenue. So pushing more new customers, da, 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 which of course it's fun. It's adrenaline. It's nice. But the back end problem have risen so much that people waited basically for 6 or 7 weeks to get the product. And what happened was that the support tickets skyrocket because all the people ask, where's my product? So you have obviously your customer support overstressed. Then people start to give bad reviews on Trustpilot, mm-hmm. on the fan page, everywhere. Then people start to make bad comments under your ads. And then it's just a question of time until the whole brand collapses. And this is one of the worst case scenarios nobody talks about, in my opinion, but which is so important. And you found a very good solution for it, which we might deep dive into a little bit later. But I'm fully with you. It's a tricky topic.
I totally feel the pain. And as you said, you might be doing great as a brand, but mm-hmm. when your supply chain goes down, it's not only the inventory, it's not only the shipments, the whole brand can go down because people will talk about it. And yeah, we all see Facebook ads with angry customers underneath because that's also an issue of customer support. Like if people go to your Facebook ads and talk negatively there because they cannot get help from your customer support. So I see a great need of bridging different points in your business, supply chain, CRM, and marketing. These three should be talking to each other, and even your website should be reflecting what's happening in your supply chain. So you set the expectations right way in the beginning of the customer journey. Mm-hmm. You should communicate when things are going to be shipped, what will happen if there are delays. So if you're taking pre-orders, back orders, make sure that the terms are clear to people. If you don't do that, you will see these kind of problems rising.
Mm-hmm. That's super important. So basically you're talking about on the product page. I think everyone knows it from Amazon. Like if you order today, your product gets mm-hmm. delivered tomorrow by 12, or if something is out of stock, when is it on stock again? When gets it shipped? This is the things you're talking about, the right expectations, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So,
Go ahead.
So, all those challenges in the past, and all those, I would say unknown, for example, this example with the ship, like nobody could know possibly that this will happen. What are your thoughts about, or what are your experiences about D2C brands with these challenges? How did they solve it, or how do they react?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, it was also interesting times for us at Fabricateur because in 2020, we were super obsessed building a tool with a high accuracy of forecasting, telling our customers which products to restock, when to restock, and in what quantities so they don't go overstock or understock. And while we were obsessed with the accuracy of our forecasting model, that incident with the ship happened in the Suez Canal. And mm-hmm. I was like, wait a minute, even if we do our best, there will be surprises in the supply chain. How can we actually make that kind of like fail safe for our customers so they don't lose revenue while they're waiting for this ship to be removed from the canal? And the idea, like after a couple of talks with our customers, it was actually around the Black Friday. The idea came from one of our customers saying like, we have shipments late for the Black Friday and we know that we will be selling a lot during this week, but we just don't have the inventory yet. It will be in stock maybe 5 days after the Black Friday, but we just don't want to stop our campaigns. We're doing so well. So how can we make this happen? I said, why don't you take pre-orders then? But they were afraid to take pre-orders because what if they sell more than they will have in stock? They wanted to put a limit on it, which is a quite legit concern, because if they oversell, then they need to go back to the orders, cancel them, refund the customers, say, sorry, maybe this will also cause negative reviews because customers will think that company oversold because they put too much discount and they decided not to sell this product anymore. So like you will raise a lot of concerns around it. So we developed a very small feature without any user interface, which actually looks at what's incoming and then limits the sales to the amount of incoming inventory. Whenever the first batch of incoming inventory was sold, it was switching to the next batch of incoming inventory. So all solving the allocation problem, both on the storefront, but also in the backend. We put more thoughts on this idea and we started to think like, what if this is not a unique request from one customer? And if this can help actually a greater audience? We started to talk with more brands, ask them like, how do they handle out of stocks? Do they just stop selling and what they do? The answer was the same for many of those. They said, we have this button, notify me when back in stock. We collect emails and when it is back in stock, we just send an email. And I asked, like, how is your conversion rates are going with this approach? It was quite low. It was actually less than 5% for many brands, because if you think about the buyer's psychology, most of the time, shopping is just a chore that you want to get done with. Like, you want to buy a gift for your girlfriend. You do your product research. You find that website. You find the product that you like and you think she will like, and then you're ready to buy it. You pull out your credit card. You want to like type it in and buy it. But when you select the size or the color that you like, you see that it's out of stock. So, but your buying intention was very high at that point. But when you see that button asking you to leave your email, the buying intention goes down right at that point, because you just want to get done with this task. You don't want to look at this page 1 week later. So you lose customers at that point. Even if they put their email there, 1 week later, it will be too late. They will not have that impulse to buy it. So for that reason, we wanted to give the consumers an option to pre-order if the product is going to be available in a couple of days. And the consumer wants to get done with that task. Just put the credit card down, pay the money, wait for the shipment done. You will be safe. You will be peaceful in your mind in that sense. So I offered this option to the customers who are using the back in stock emails. They loved it, but they also approached it with a bit of insecurity, because they were like, hey, but what if we oversell? Then we developed this allocation feature, which prevents the overselling. But what if the... what if there's a delay in the purchase order? What if the container from China to New York will be late, even after our customers place a pre-order? Because you promised them on the webpage that it will be shipped in 15 days and there is a delay. Like, how can we communicate this? I ask them, how do you do it normally? They go to Shopify admin, find the orders, figure out who placed the pre-order, and then send an email one by one. This was difficult because they don't have the link between the pre-order on Shopify with the incoming purchase order, because supply chain data is sitting somewhere else, probably in an Excel sheet, while the order is sitting in Shopify. So you need to make them talk. That's what we did. We have the data of purchase orders in Fabricateur. We have the direct integration with Shopify. Why don't we pass that information to Shopify? Make the operations team and customer support team's life easier. So whenever you come to Fabricateur, change the ETA of the purchase order, there is an option to send an email through the Klaviyo integration to all the customers who actually purchased from that incoming container. So the email will be sent to these customers with a template that you decide. And I've seen the best practice there is actually being honest about the delay. Hey, there has been something happened in the supply chain we could not control. We know that you are excitedly waiting for this product, But the best we can do right now is to give you a 20% discount on your next order, or we defined like $50 voucher for you. So that's our way of saying sorry. And once you do that, your consumers will be more understanding about the issue. And you will actually stop the customer support tickets before they start to contact you.
100%.
So, yeah, that's how we handled this case. And now it turned into a fully baked feature that works for many other brands in different verticals. And some brands actually became creative about how to use this feature beyond pre-order, beyond back orders.
Actually, that reminds me. So when I had my jewelry brand, like between 2016 and like 19, I had exactly this challenge that we did a product launch and we sold too much product. And it took like 3 months for reproducing the product. We got so many angry customers. So one by one, we needed to check Shopify and then sending out the emails. And so it was just a pain in the ass, I tell you. So in my opinion, this is really genius, especially when the solution is like automated. And I think general, I think communication is key in life. And by just communicating with your customers that there is a problem and a delay, already that is so much helpful and brings so much clarity and sets the expectation right. So I think this is genius, and maybe even you don't need something like a 20% discount even. Of course it helps. Yeah. But to communicate that there's a change, it's genius. I love the feature.
Exactly. And you highlighted the communication part. Mm-hmm. It's very important to actually over communicate that the product is on pre-order or back order, because as I said, people are impulsive with their purchases. They want to get done with it. And if you don't make this pre-order very visible and prominent, people will just like click buy, and then they will not remember that this was a pre-order, and they'll come back to your customer support and say like, where's my order? So that's why we over communicated on the app, on the storefront. So underneath the pre-order button, we say the shipment date, the button label exactly says this is a pre-order, in the basket, in the checkout page, also in the order confirmation pages, we highlight this is a pre-order and you will receive it in XYZ days. So trying to prevent that misunderstanding, because your intention as a merchant should not be tricking people into buying a pre-order. You should be making it clear that this will be shipped later than the normal products.
Did you see any effect? You mentioned conversion rate earlier. Did you see, for example, let's make it a little bit more visual. For example, you are in stock and you're selling on, 4% conversion rate. Now the product gets out of stock and you offer them to pre-order. I assume that there would be also people who don't buy because of that. What impact does it have in general? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obviously a lot better than if it's just like the email. Yeah, put your email and we notify you. I think then it drops 100%. But can you give me a little bit of feeling what's the difference?
Yeah, this hugely depends on the product category, which type of product you're selling, and also the brand loyalty that your customers have. So if you're selling something that is easy to replace by ordering from another website, people will look for alternatives that they can order immediately. So pre-order may not work that effectively in that case. And also if the product, we have some customers who are selling furniture, and for furniture businesses, the stock is even a bigger problem, because you have a bulk amount of inventory. They take huge space in your warehouse, and you cannot just stock hundreds of sofas in your warehouse. So pre-order is actually a way of doing business for furniture brands, and customers are understanding about pre-orders there, because they used to they're used to having this mindset. Even if you go to a store on a shopping street, that you will have lead times, and they're understanding about those. So the pre-orders have a positive impact on the mm-hmm. furniture kind of stores. Also, electronics, like if you are making a big launch, if this product is unique, that your customers are also used to wait for products that will be delivered on a later date. But for a t-shirt, I'm not sure like how it will work. Like t-shirt is on the more lower end of the pricing. It can be easily replaced with another t-shirt from another store. But if you're offering something unique, like if it's a product drop that you are making, mm-hmm. Or if it's a different technology of a fabric that you're using, people will afford to wait for it. So this hugely depends. We have some customers who are selling products, merchandise for celebrities and influencers. Their fan base is always okay for waiting for the product release because they cannot get it somewhere else. So it's all about the loyalty. But if we need to talk about the numbers, what I have seen, especially with the shoe brands, they've seen 10% of increase on their overall store revenue per month when they start taking back orders. Because these are brands that are selling shoes with some vision and purpose around. So it's either vegan or fairly produced, no child label used, or these kind of things that people value about, and they will wait for this product. They will not replace it with another mainstream product from Amazon. So it really depends on the brand.
Gotcha. Another interesting topic what just pops into my mind is, because I had this problem in the past, I had, like, in my brand, I had, I think, over 100 SKUs because of different colors, different styles, and so on. And I remember the struggle with the Excel sheets and when to order what product and so on. And I always thought there must be a better solution, but back then there was basically just the Excel sheets and good mm-hmm. intentions. And trying to understand what are the best-selling products and when to reorder. The result was we were out of stock so many times, basically, because in theory it made sense for us, but the reality was, okay, now this campaign works better than expected, so we sold out faster. What is your take on this challenge many growing D2C brands are facing?
Yeah, inventory forecasting is actually the main problem we are trying to solve. I mm-hmm. always explain it this way. You need an inventory forecasting solution in place, and it is the painkiller that you're looking for. But when you actually come across with someone who needs help, let's say they have an accident with their bicycle and they're bleeding, the first thing you do is not to give them the painkiller. You actually stop the bleeding. And for us, bleeding here is the revenue. If you have out of stock products, first you need to apply the pressure, stop the bleeding. In this case, the bandage or the first aid kit is the back orders. Mm-hmm. And once you stabilize the person, then you need to think about how to treat the person on a longer run, give them the painkiller. For us, the painkiller is the supply planning and the forecasting feature. And if you're running with Excel sheets, you really need to be on top of your game about how you're planning it on a weekly basis. You need to look for the incoming inventory. How is it going to be affecting the available inventory at a certain date, like 4 weeks later, how much inventory you will have on hand, accounting for the returns, maybe the back orders, also incoming inventory, how much you will have in 4 weeks. Now, I'm asking this to our listeners. Do you know how much inventory you will have for your top seller 4 weeks from now? Probably you will go back to your Excel sheets and you will realize that you are probably missing out on inventory, incoming inventory, or the returns. So you will not have an accurate number. For doing that, you need to have a real-time sync with your e-commerce platform. And only then you will be able to know what it will look like. And this will hugely drive the other parts of your business too. Then you will decide how much you're going to invest in the marketing campaigns that are affecting the sales for this product. Can you afford to double down on that marketing campaign looking at your inventory? Or first, do you need to restock maybe? because your customers are not very happy with the back order. So you always have to be in stock. Couple of things to be mindful about is the seasonality. And if you're selling seasonal products, you have to be very careful with that, especially with fashion products. Like if you stocked a product for a color that is very popular this summer and it's not going to sell the next summer, you have to get rid of that product. Otherwise, it will turn into a dead stock and you need to identify your slow moving inventory. For doing that, you need to look at the velocity for each SKU. If you do this at the category level or the product type level, you might be missing out the extreme trends happening on the SKU level, because they will be smoothened out by the averages when you sum up for the product category or type. So that's why we do it at the SKU level. We flag every product that is gaining velocity or losing velocity, because these are the early signals that you will know this product is going to die very soon or it's going to be your rising star. And you can do that with Excel sheets too. Just like put two columns for one product, the sales amount for the last month, sales amount for the month before, and look at the difference. The difference will tell you something about percentage change, and then you will know. But what if you have 200 SKUs and you need to update this sheet every day because you have a fast growth store? This will be a deadly task. And as a founder, you're already wearing a lot of different hats. And this is the part that you don't like the most. This is the unsexy part of the business.
Exactly.
So that's why it loses priority in your task list. It always gets pushed down at the bottom of your list. And the moment that you forget about your inventory, then it starts to become a problem.
Exactly. And as you just said, the problem gets bigger and bigger the more SKUs you have. So at a certain point, you need to make the decision. Do I hire someone for 3, 4, 5,000 euros per month in salary? Or do I invest in a super smart solution, which is fully automated, faster, reliable, not making mistakes, and reasonably cheaper? Then I guess the decision should be clear for every growing D2C brand. Yeah, nice. I would love that we would have this conversation already a couple of years ago when I had my brand. But I really see totally the benefits and the great solution you guys came up with. So super, super nice. One question I have in my head right now, because I mentioned like me as a person, my agency, our clients, we are always focused on revenue growth. And it happened not once, but several times that a campaign is like really, really strong. Or for example, there's a really great momentum like Valentine's Day, or the best example is Black Friday. So what is your take on in the marketing side? The campaigns are pushing a lot. They're selling very, very well. But at the same time, the stocks are going lower and lower and lower. What should I do as a D2C founder? Should I decrease my ad spend, losing momentum, losing this opportunity? Or what is your take on this? What is your experience, basically?
So if you are able to keep the same CPC as you are scaling up your marketing campaign, then you should definitely scale it up. I'm always more on the aggressive side of the growth, so don't be afraid of the inventory issues. Just double down on that marketing campaign. If it is possible, go talk to your supplier, offer them a higher unit price so they can produce faster, prioritize them in their manufacturing backlog, and also explore the ways how can you bring that batch of products faster to your warehouse. And that's actually another problem that D2Cs are struggling to solve. There are different methods of shipment, right? You can use air, which is the most expensive one, and there's ship freight, land, and different methods of land. Like you can use trucks, you can use trains. And so you need to decide which one you need to use. And especially after the COVID, the supply chain, the logistics became very expensive. The container prices went like more than 6 times higher. So brands are quite sensitive about the logistics cost. If your marketing campaign is going well, and if you have enough profit margins, and if your marketing campaign is not eating up as you are scaling up the budget, you should definitely consider air shipments, so the products will be faster in your warehouse and your customers will not need to wait. So yeah, first bring that growth in and then start worrying about how can you make that promise delivered to your customers, but do not oversell without telling them this is a pre-order. Do not create a backlog of shipments if you don't have that inventory. First, this is not honest. Second, it can blow up very badly for your business.
100%. And I've not seen that once. I have seen it several times, to be honest. So, very, very great content so far. I'm super happy about this podcast episode. You are working with a lot of successful D2C brands, because obviously if you have those type of problems, you figured out already how to talk to customers, how to reach your audience, how to sell your product. Could you share for the listeners your, I would say, best practices for inventory decisions? Especially for brands which are currently at a low seven-figure yearly revenue stage and want to grow to the eight figures and beyond. Do you maybe can summarize the key learnings or the best practices to mm-hmm. make this journey as smooth as possible?
Actually, we're working with a variety of brands in terms of annual revenue, GMV. It's mostly between like $500,000 to $30 million of sales a year. That's the average that we're working with. And the ones that are less than $500,000 per year are still the ones trying to find the product market fit for their own business. As a product manager from the past, I always try to validate ideas with the lowest effort possible, because as a brand, if you can figure out what's your winning product is going to be like, you can actually run several tests. This can be A/B tests to figure out if that product page is converting. And it could be also a test for the product ideas, like maybe you are selling an iPhone case and you want to try a different style, different material, if it's going to sell or not. Why don't you just do a limited launch by taking pre-orders or just building a waiting list for that? And try to contact people, ask them, like, why did you want to make this buy this product? What makes it different than others? And offer them this product for free in the end. It will not hurt your revenue if you give like 10 products for free, because ideas or the feedback from the customer is invaluable. Once you do that, then you will get smarter about your product catalog, and then this will feed into your supply planning sheets. You will know which products to bring in. So the reality or the truth that you're after is always hidden in your customer segment, and try to make ways to talk to them, build a relationship with these people, find out which channels they're following online, and try to understand the audience, and then bring the product that actually makes sense. Once you experience your first stock out, means that you're on the right path. So stock outs should not be a problem for you as a growing brand. You should be happy. You should go celebrate that. Means that it's a milestone for you.
That's a great sentence you just dropped. I like that. So is there any topic left you would like to talk about and share with the listeners regarding those major topics?
Mm-hmm. As we said, supply chain planning became a real deal in the last couple of years. And as we have experience with the talent in software development, now we are also having a shortage in the supply chain talent too. Like before, people were mostly overseeing these experts working in supply chain. You don't think about them. If you're a low figure company, maybe you think about your first 10 million and then you will hire a supply chain person. But these kind of things are all, like, they used to be pushed at the bottom of the list, but in the last 2 years, the importance has increased, and the brands are looking for supply chain experts all around the world. So this had two results. First, the cost for hiring a supply chain person in your company has increased. Second, as a small e-commerce brand, you will be a difficult choice for them because there will be bigger companies trying to hunt these people, recruit them. And you need to, yeah, you need to make a sweet deal for them to be part of your company. So hiring a supply chain talent became more difficult. And that's actually another reason why we wanted to actually create a virtual employee for your company who can actually do the legwork for you, plan the purchase orders for you, automate that process. So you can do it with as little time that you need to invest. And you don't need to have that full-time position in your company because it's already difficult. And always be mindful about this kind of like changes in the talent market because it will hugely affect your business in that sense. That would be one advice I would like to give towards the end. And I cannot think of anything that's,
I think we covered a lot in this episode and you shared really, really nice insights and learnings from the past couple of years. I think just this episode alone will help at least make D2C Brands think about the topic supply chain a lot more. And with your solution, I think, in my opinion, you brought a very, very good solution to those problems. And I can just speak of myself. I had those problems in the past when I run a brand and I see it every day with our clients in the coaching and also at the agency. So I'm totally convinced. So, what I want to do for you is that, actually I do a call to action for your solution because in my opinion, it's super great and I only can recommend it to all the listeners. So I think you offer a free trial as I know it. So if someone of you wants to check out Fabrikateur, just go on the website fabrikateur.io. I think we also put it in the description on YouTube or in the podcast notes if you're just listening to this episode. And if you mention that you come from the Ecom Secrets podcast or from Ecom House or from me, Daniel Wittmann, that you get a very special offer, which they tell you when you start communicating. And I'm super grateful that you have been part of Ecom House in the podcast of Ecom Secrets. I'm already confused of all the e-commerce. I'm in this game since too long. I would suggest we do another episode in like, I don't know, 6 to 12 months to talk about the changes of the supply chains and the cost of goods and suppliers and so on, because things are moving fast in D2C space. And I think it's always interesting for the listeners to be up to date and see also the insights from you and the other brands. So you're more than welcome for a second interview. Amazing. And if there are people who want to connect with you, maybe have specific questions for their brands and specific case, is there any way how people can connect with you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Bahadir Efeoglu. You can search for Fabrikateur. You will find me there. Fabrikateur is written with E, but I think if you don't have E on your keyboard, you will still be able to find it. and I know it sounds a little bit funny for our American customers to call it Fabrikateur, but that makes the brand stick to into their minds, I believe. Find me on LinkedIn, Twitter, or just go to our website and book a demo. Mostly I am running the demo sessions myself to better understand the brands. We also offer a free onboarding session where we will talk about the inventory challenges. If our solution works for you, it's great. We will happy to have you. If it doesn't, then we will guide you to our supply chain experts or a solution that might work better for you, because we know one size does not fit all in e-commerce, and we are quite honest about our solution fit. So that being said, I actually have a little invite to make for potential business partners out there. The agencies who are working with Shopify brands, 3PLs, warehouses, anyone who is actually working around or near these problems in customer support, fulfillment, inventory, please contact us because we are enlarging our partnership network and we have seen great synergies working in that sense. So happy to talk to partners as well.
Amazing. And again, I can just say we have clients in our agency who work with Fabricateur, fast growing D2C brands. So I saw the tool by myself, and everyone who likes good, simple, clear, nice design solutions, you will find it, because I'm not a believer in complicated things are make things better, right? Simple things is the hard job, to make it simple and to make it really, really good. And in my opinion, you achieved that, which is super nice. So check it out. And we came to an end of the podcast episode or the video if you watch on YouTube. Thanks again, Bahadir, to be my guest here. And you're more than welcome for another session again.